So even though the signers are goyim, kshevim, the shtaris are kosher, and you can use them to collect or whatever it is, chutz megidin noshim v'shin chorei avadim, except for gidin and documents of being slaves. Reb Shimon, I'm af elu kshevim. Reb Shimon says that even those kind are kosher with goyishal witnesses, Render the Chachamim mentioned the concept that shtaris that are signed by goyim apostle is only if they were prepared by private people, not in the presence of an actual goyish accord.
Private people, just private goyim.
Yeah. So we'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow. You have a situation, for example, where goyim are just gathered together, like for a fair or something, but not as a formalized court. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says kaposik v'tani. So the Mishnah is just telling us generically that all shtaris are kosher except for gittim and shechira avadim, which means loishna mecha, loishna matana. So it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a document of sale or whether we're talking about a document of a gift. Now, what's the difference? Mishnah and mecha. So let's consider. We can understand why it would be that a document of sale is kosher. Because the document of sale, this is what I was mentioning before, that there's two different kinds of shtaris. There's the ones that are just used as a proof, and then there's ones that actually make the thing happen. When it comes to sales, the document itself does not make the sale happen. It's a proof. How does the sale happen? Land can be acquired, la locha, we'll learn about it in Kedushin extensively. Not verbally, but the kesef, the shtar, or the chazaka. It can be acquired with the shtar, but normally it's acquired with kesef, the transfer of money, or with chazaka.
So the
shtar is only there as a proof of the transaction. On the other hand, a shtar matana, how does the matana take effect? By the shtar being received. Without the shtar, there's no matana. We're talking about land. If I sell you land and you're giving me money for it, and that's how it becomes yours. But if I'm giving you karka, there's no money exchanging hands. What makes it happen? What makes that karka is officially yours? The fact that I gave you a shtar. So that's the question. Bishlam and Mecher, I can understand when it comes to a bill of sale, as soon as you give the money in the presence of the Dayanim, and again, this is, remember, a regularly established Goyish court, then already you're Kone, because that's what? As soon as he gives Zuzi money, Kamayu, in the presence of the Goyish judges, who dekona, at that point he's koina, who shtar a raya ba'almahu, and the shtar is just a raya. And we know, therefore, we can trust that shtar, because if he had not actually given the money in the presence of the court, loy have amari nakshayu, they wouldn't perjure themselves, the kafs and the shtar, and write him a shtar falsely without knowing that a transaction actually took place. Because since they were regularly established court, they're not just some fly-by-night operation. They're reliable. They're only going to write this shtar if they know the transaction actually took place. Therefore, we can rely on it. So we can understand that. Ela matana, but we have to ask when it comes to a gift, the maikapani, how is the recipient acquiring that gift? La b'hai shtara, isn't he receiving it only with that shtar? Now this shtar, how is it worth anything if it's signed? How is it worth anything if it's signed by goyim? On the face of it, again, when you have a shtar which is actually causing the transaction to happen, it has to be signed by Jews in order for it, because only Jews are validated.
As a proof, you don't need,
because there's a concept that the Tosfos Rid talks about it over here. There's a concept called loy ivri sadi el l'shtori. Really, the only reason you need witnesses in cases when you need them for a proof is only in case one of the parties to the transaction lies about it. If everybody were honest, you wouldn't need edim for these kinds of things. But when it comes to a matana, the matana is only a matana because of the shtar, which has edim signed on it. Goyim are not valid edim because the whole concept of edus only applies to Jews. So therefore, how can you accept those a shtar matana that's signed by goyim?
So the giving of the money, or keep the answer to the receipt.
proof it's being ignited.
But that's the point. It's only as a proof.
Only as a proof.
So if it was being done at the head, if it was being done by private people, not by regularly established court, fine. They might be, they might take bribes or whatever. They might for some reason write a shtar without making sure that the transaction actually went through. But a properly duly established court is not going to do that. But when it comes to a shtar, that actually makes the thing happen, such as the shtar matana, not there's no court involved. But it's not a question of whether we can trust the court. Fine, let's say we can trust the court. But the edus, there's no edus. Because the edim are assigned on the shtar, are goyim, and goyim are not valid edim in halacha.
But let's say the matana is done in front of a goyish court.
That's the point. That's the question we're asking. The matana may be done in front of a goyish court, but what makes the matana take effect? The fact that a shtar that's been signed by edim changes hands.
Yes.
Goyim can't be valid edim. Goyim are not betorah of edim. Therefore, how is the matana a matana?
That's because the matana itself is the transaction.
The document itself is the transaction, right.
So
Rashi...
Yes. You cannot have a matana without a document.
Without a document, that's the point, right. Because how else, yeah.
Who said that?
That's how it is. That's how it is, because how else? There's no money changing hands.
No, but you could give it. I can give you a matana.
But that's a matana on a talisman, fine. So I pick it up, and I do hagbo with it. You can't do hagbo with land.
You're talking about a matana of a karka.
Now Rashi answers. We could have answered yesterday when we learned. Right before the Mishnah at the top of Yudam and Aleph, we said that actually we said over there that actually there could be a difference between you have the Edim who signed versus the Edim Mesira.
Right.
We could answer that there are Jewish Edim Mesira involved over here, and therefore it's not an issue. We can ignore the Edim who are signed in the Shtar and just focus on the Edim Mesira. Rashi says the Gemara that was kind of a doichik in the Gemara. That's not the real answer. Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says that is the real answer. Edim Mesira would be enough. Nevertheless, the point is that if there's no Edim Mesira, we're talking about if there are no Edim Mesira, let's say the Edim Chasima themselves watch the shtar being handed over, then there's nothing. That's what the Gemara is asking. Chaskel Balmud. There is, by the way, that's our choice with the Gemara. Yes. There is, by the way, interestingly, there is an opinion of one of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yakir, who said that actually Midaraisa, Goyim would be kosher as Edus. It's only Midrabanan that we don't, because we're concerned that Goyim are prone to lying. So then what is the Gemara saying over here, Chaskobal?
So
Midrabanan we don't allow, Midaraisa would be valid. And in this case, it was done in front of our colleagues from Goyim, maybe it would be acceptable. But the question is, so then why is the Gemara saying Chaskobal, that the Shtar is worthless? And the answer is, because yes, fine, we might accept Goyim's Edus Midaraisa, but we have a different issue. The whole concept that land can be conveyed, can be transferred from one person to another based on a shtar, we learn from a pasuk in Sefer Yirmiyah, where the pasuk describes there how Yirmiyah bore a field from his cousin Hanamel and wrote out a document, and then afterwards the pasuk says, Sodis, the Sefer Yiknu, that in the future Jewish people will buy fields in Eretz Yisrael and buy it using a document. That's where we learn the whole concept that ownership of land can be transferred using a document. Well, that only applies to Jews. That pasuk is not written to apply to goyim. Therefore, the same way as we said yesterday that goyim are not shayach to gittin and then to shechura avodim, because they're not involved with those things. Those mitzvahs don't apply to them. The same way, even if one should have been a yakir, fine. If we were talking about edus of something that goyim are equally as much obligated in or involved in as Jews, then yes. But documents of matana not, or other conveyance of land, not necessarily.
The Mara
Amatilla, there is talks about
mortgage.
Yeah, you paid money. Don't say anything about
the shtar.
Yeah.
So that part is the
right. First of all, this is before the third is given. You can't make a proof from that. But But anyway, no, we know for sure. Of course, character can be transferred with money. But when you have a matana, there's no money being involved.
No.
By definition, a matana, yeah.
And what about if you do matana with a puta?
That's not a matana, then. That's a sale. No, come on. Amar Shmuel, so the answer is Shmuel says Dina de Machus Dina, the famous thing that the laws of the country are considered, the laws that the goyim make are considered valid laws in halacha, and therefore yes. Since, again, since this is a properly established court, and loy mari nafshayer, they're not going to do something that's going to perjure them, that's going to say that they're not going to do something illegal, disreputable, or whatever. Therefore, yes, if they have in their laws, if they have in their laws that a document like this, a document that says that Pliny gave this field to Pliny is valid, then fine, that has validity. We don't say chas kabalmo. We say even though it's signed by goyim, it has validity in halacha. Or another possibility you could answer, when the Mishnah said that everything that's signed by that's written and signed in various accords is kosher, except for Gittin Nashim and Shechur HaVadim, don't say it means after except for those two. It means except for anything that's like those. Meaning, a get or a get shichur, well, in the sense that a get or a get shichur are among types of shtaris where the shtar itself makes the thing happen. Without the shtar, there's no gedushin. Without the shtar, there's no freeing of the eved. I don't remember what the term for it is.
There is
a term for it, but for the shtar that actually makes the thing happen. Not that it's not for a raya, it's that it actually makes the shtar kinyan, I think maybe. Or something. Whatever. The point is, anything similar to that. So yes, it would include a shtar matana as well, according to the second.
Such as
a shtar matana. Because a shtar matana, there's no matana without the shtar. Therefore, according to the second answer, never mind dina de machos dina, we would have to answer that yes, a shtar matana would in fact be kosher if it was signed by goyish edim. Only a shtar mecher would be kosher. Okay, so the Rambam discusses that based on our Gemara, that shtaris that are certain kinds of shtaris that are signed by goyim are kosher, certain ones are kosher, and he mentions that. He mentions that his rebbeim said that among the ones that are possible if they're signed by goyim are IOUs, shtori choyv. The Rambam himself says I disagree with that. Shtori choyv that are signed by goyim are kosher. I think he says as long as they saw the money actually exchanging hands, not just for example that he admitted in his presence, but whatever. The point is the shtori choyv are kosher because again shtori choyv is only for a raya. It's not it doesn't make anything happen. Whereas, for example, in Jewish law, a chayv is a chayv, whether it's verbal or whether it's oral or whether it's written, and there's a difference. If it's written, then you're able to get from the chasam mishabadim, you may be collect from the chasam mishabadim. If not, then not. Well, actually, tomorrow we'll have a bit of a discussion about that on the next app. So according to the Rambam, then a shtar chayv signed by goyim would be kosher in halacha. According to the Rambam, rabbeim not. The question we'll also talk about is the Gemara actually giving two different answers over here. Is the second answer necessarily contradicting the first? Well, maybe not. Because maybe you could argue according to the second answer, that's not true, that dinah d'machos dinah. We know that's a generally established principle in halacha. So one answer, they say, is dinah d'machos dinah only applies when the government has a certain vested interest in it. Dinah d'machos dinah, for example, includes the government, let's say, is entitled to collect taxes. On various incomes or various economic activities or what have you, because they have a direct interest in it. They don't have a direct interest in how land is transferred from one person to another. They have an indirect interest, so they can tax it. But it's a
direct interest.
It's more indirect. So therefore you could argue that maybe their jurisdiction doesn't extend to that kind of thing.
Not really.
They care about it because they want to know who they want to know who to tax. Not.
So the point is, they say that there's no this country, this state, there's no really big transaction that is not in writing.
Fine, but that's because they want to be able to know who's taxed for it. If it's a country where they don't have real estate taxes, then but if it's a place where they don't have real estate taxes, Las Vegas, in Las Vegas, for example, they don't have property taxes. They raise enough money from the casinos.
Yeah. In Las Vegas?
I don't know if it's in Las Vegas, only in the whole state of Nevada or whatever. So presumably over there they wouldn't care, and therefore it doesn't extend to their jurisdiction. Bit of an interesting thing. Also, there's a number of different Rishonim and Achronim talk about a number of different bases. Why what's the logic anyway that we say dinu d'machos dinu? What's the underlying logic behind it? So some of them say we learn from Sukkim, there's an interesting one that I think the Ram says, that the logic is because since land belongs to the Goyish king, especially in those days under the feudal system, but even to a certain extent nowadays, it's like that. Therefore, it's like there's an implied contract. If you want to live in this country, follow the laws. If you're not going to follow the laws, get out of here. On that basis, dinah d'machos d'dinah. Based on that, the Rambam says an interesting thing. Therefore, this concept of dinah d'machos d'dinah would not apply to a government in Eretz Yisrael, a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because they don't have the right to kick anybody out of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael belongs equally to all Jews. Therefore, according to that, dinah d'machos d'dinah would not apply in Eretz Yisrael. It would only apply anywhere else in the world. That's an interesting svara.
Yeah.
So maybe according to that, then it should have got to a certain point. Yeah.
You have to follow the Torah.
But the question is, you have to follow a government because according to the Ran Svara, maybe you don't have to because they don't have the right to kick you out of the country, unlike in any other country where they do because they're there. Jewish government. We're talking about it. Doesn't really matter. The Goyish government has no right to kick anybody out of Eretz Yisrael either.
We're saying that you don't have to follow.
According to that svara, again, there's many other svaras. One of them actually is that it's actually based on something we find about a Jewish king. So in Sefer Shmuel, in Shmuel Aleph, it tells about how when the Jewish people came and asked Shmuel and Navi for a king, first he's very upset, and he asks the Eivishter tells him, go ahead, but before you appoint them a king, tell them what a king does. And he reads them off a whole Megillah about the various things that a king expropriates property, he takes people to serve him, whatever. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has a discussion over there. Are these things that a king is allowed to do l'halacha? And therefore he's warning them, be aware when you have a king, you're going to be subject to all these taxations and exactions and whatever, and with the validity of halacha. Or is he saying, practically speaking, kings tend to be tyrants, and they tend to do these things whether they have the right to or not. Halacha is the first opinion. Call up Omer Parshas Melech Melech Motzavoy. Anything that says in that parsha, in those 10 psukim or whatever, the king has the right to do. But that might have a long list of it in Hilchos Melachim. A king has a right to seize property. A king has a right, for example, when it's necessary for government purposes to seize property, sort of like eminent domain. He has the right to draft people into his army or into the civil service or whatever. He has the right to 1/10 or whatever the figure is of everybody's income, etc., etc.
But he has the right to do it without taking the opinion of a consulting body. He can do it.
Yeah, he can do it with that dinam on his own.
Discretionary.
Yeah. Okay, there are details of that. Some posts can say that are customarily done by government, not like something that a king just comes up somewhere out of left field. Also, actually, a very important thing is they say it's only when the laws apply equally to everybody. If there's a law that discriminates, for example, against Jews, then we don't say that the Mahos did on it. Anyway, returning to that then, if we say, according to that opinion, that a king has the right to all these extra judicial things because of being a king, well then, if dinah d'machos d'dinah is based on that, then it doesn't matter whether it's a Jewish king or a Goyish king. It doesn't matter whether it's in Eretz Yisrael. Shaul is a Jewish king, and he's in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, I'm going to come back. No, I haven't yet. I'm going to come back.